At Pluralsight, we don't just teach skills. We are building the tech workforce who deliver results fast, accelerated by top-tier content. Lead with confidence. Lead with expertise. Visit us at Pluralsight.com to tap in and learn more.
This is John Batchelor. I'm with Professor Tyler Anbinder. His new book is Plentiful Country, The Great Potato Famine and the Making of Irish New York. The potato famine is a story of a virus traveling over oceans that were part of the route to explore the New World, but then the products of the New World came back to Europe. And one particular product was potato seed. Professor, I did not know where it came from. I presumed it was, that it just originated in Ireland. That is inaccurate. Why did potato seed carry the virus? Why didn't it take plant in, say, North America? Thank you.
So the seed potatoes that the Irish used to grow their own potatoes, because the way you grow potatoes is you put a little tiny potato in the ground and from it sprouts many potatoes. The seed potatoes that the Irish used came from North America, especially from the United States. And American farmers would fertilize their crop with guano, bird droppings that came from South America. And apparently in those bird droppings, there was a fungus. And the fungus didn't really affect potato growth in the United States very much because we have hot, dry summers and that would kill the fungus. But in Ireland, where you have cool, damp summers, the fungus was able to thrive and multiply and in that way infect the crop of an entire nation.
The crop is the potato crop that was critical to feeding Ireland. This is another world where the British Empire did not take responsibility for the lives of people of Ireland, but they did take responsibility for the profits. So the professor takes us to the Lansdowne Estate, which I see is at the border between Cork County and Kerry County. This is the poorest of the poor. When the potato famine struck, was 45, 46 in that zone. At first, they thought they could outlast it. They thought that the next year's crop, it would go away. Is that correct, Professor?
Right. There had been from time to time, things that had affected the potato crop and brought in a worse crop than usual. And so when the crop in 1845 is hit by this fungus, which people don't understand in those days is a fungus, they think, oh, well, we can get by until next year when next year's crop will be fine and then we'll do okay. But instead, in 1846, 90% of the potato crop is destroyed. And this is so important because, you know, as you mentioned, the British Empire had so impoverished Ireland that, about half the Irish population was totally dependent on potatoes for their sustenance. They ate potatoes for breakfast, potatoes for lunch, and potatoes for dinner. It was the only thing they ate day after day, week after week, month after month, all year.
The potato was substantive until it went missing. And what we're looking at here is gradual famine, but it doesn't hit the Ireland all in the same place. My understanding is the west of Ireland got hit hardest because it was farthest away from the large cities. Why did it start in the west? Was that something to do with the weather, Professor?
So right. So the famine starts in the west in part because it's the wettest, dampest part of Ireland, because the prevailing winds blow in from the Atlantic Ocean from west to east. So that's where the fungus is going to take hold first. Secondly, though, the west is the poorest part of Ireland in those days. And therefore, that's the part of the country where the people are most dependent on potatoes for their sustenance. And therefore, when the potato crop fails, those are the people who are going to begin to starve first. And also because it's the poorest, they have the least savings and the least ability to buy other kinds of food to get them by.
Yes, the Lansdowne Estate is an example of what is true for all of Ireland. There are 750 landowners, I'm following the professor's reporting, who own everything. And to be a farmer in Ireland is different than being a farm laborer. Is this equivalent to what we would say is sharecroppers? Is that a farm laborer?
Not exactly, because though kind of. The difference would be is very often in the west of Ireland, a farm laborer is someone who's just working for somebody else as doing labor on their farm, whereas a sharecropper gets to, you know, has some control over what they grow and when they work. Farm labor mostly has to go work when their employer tells them. But what would happen is somebody whose main occupation was farm labor, working for a more well-to-do farmer, would have his own basically large vegetable garden, maybe 1 acre on which he would plant potatoes to feed his family, because the income from the farm labor wouldn't be enough to feed his family. Or very often the pay for being a farm laborer on someone else's farm was to be given a plot of land to grow your own potatoes on.
But they paid rent to the landowner, who is absentee all the time. Lansdowne certainly was the Marquis of Lansdowne. He was off in London. We're also talking about an extremely densely populated Ireland. I think you said it was about South Carolina size.
Correct.
And very packed. So the famine immediately damages everyone's expectations. Lansdowne himself then decides to pay for the passage for 2,000 of his renters to America. Why did he do that? It doesn't strike me as a generous man. Was he trying to get rid of them? Was this an English prejudice I'm unaware of?
It was basically a financial decision. So the English, not wanting to have to pay for the for helping people who were suffering during the famine, decided that the Irish landowners would have to pay the taxes that would support those who had been made indigent by the famine. Someone like Lansdowne, who had thousands of tenants, decided it was cheaper to pay to ship them to the United States rather than pay to feed them for what could be many years. Because, you know, by the time Lansdowne decides to do that, you're in the fourth or fifth year of the famine and there's no end in sight. Nobody understands what this fungus is that's destroying the potatoes, and nobody understands how to stop it.
So he pays for the passage, and the families that make the decision to go are not the sickest and the weakest. They're the strongest of the lot, the ones who've survived the famine so far. So they become the famine Irish, though the real famine Irish never leave Ireland, as I understand. Their task now is to get to America. My note says they walked to Cork, they walked to Dublin, and they walked to Belfast, and then took a ship across to Liverpool. Is that where they departed America?
Correct. It was typical that even though it makes no sense to us today, though if you've ever had to travel the wrong direction to change planes to go to your ultimate destination, you would understand the cheapest way to get to America was from Liverpool. There were so many ships going from Liverpool that's where it was the cheapest. So most of the Irish traveled in the wrong direction from Ireland to Liverpool in England, and then took ships from Liverpool to America.
And these ships left intermittently. There was no schedule. When they were full, they left. They're small ships. They're not Titanics. And we're going to turn to what the famine Irish experienced on the voyage, 35 days across the Atlantic, and what they found when they arrived in New York City. The book is Plentiful Country, The Great Potato Famine and the Making of Irish New York. Professor Tyler Anbinder is the author. This is CBS Eye on the World. I'm John Bash.
You're listening to CBS Eye on the World with John Batchelor.